This morning, we are talking about something that's pretty sensitive, really. Where is God when life falls apart? Let me start by saying this. I don't know if you're going to leave satisfied with everything that's said. I don't know if you're going to feel better because of what's said. I hope it doesn't offend or insult you. It's a difficult, difficult question. And it really flows out of the why. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why doesn't God just do this? Why doesn't God just stop that? Why is there so much hurt and pain and suffering and all these things in the world? We're going to do our best to tackle that over the next half hour or so. And it's not an easy thing. It's not easy when you read in the newspaper a couple weeks ago in the Toronto, I don't know if it was the Sun, the Star, what it was, but it said this: grief counselors are helping students mourn the loss of two classmates at separate Toronto high schools after a burst of violence yesterday, which was Monday, October 6. It claimed the lives of three young men. Two teenage boys were shot to death during what witnesses said was a lunch hour gathering of students that got out of hand behind a high-rise building across the street from the school. Let me ask you something. Where is God when life falls apart for the families of those victims? We know that every 4 seconds someone dies of world hunger. We know that stuff like child prostitution is happening around the world, all these injustices. Where is God when pain and suffering are happening? Today you come into this place, and we alluded to it earlier on in the service. You come in and you are going through pain and suffering. You are going through struggle. Life feels like it's falling apart for you. It might not be the cancer. I found out I had cancer. It might not be that. It might be, I can't believe I found out my kid was doing this, or I just lost my job and I'm going to lose my house soon, or whatever crises, whatever situation, you ask yourself, where is God when life falls apart? It's heavy. It's lofty. Let me first go to the beginning, okay? So let's not ask the question, where's God when life falls apart? Let me first ask this question. Why does life fall apart? Why does it fall apart? Well, let me simplify this. I think you could probably do a whole series on this, but let's just make this really simple right now. I think there's really two things. Life can fall apart on us because of the consequences of choices we make. We all intend to make good choices, but sometimes they turn out to be bad. They turn out to be the wrong choice. Consequence happens to every choice. And it's funny, just in our human nature, that maybe sometimes we don't intend to make the right choice. We choose the wrong thing, and we know it's the wrong thing, and we face consequences because of that. Life can fall apart. Pain and suffering can come in as a result of those things. But man, there's a whole cloud of gray. It's not as black and white as that all the time, is it? I don't choose, or someone doesn't choose, I should say, to have their child diagnosed with cancer, to lose their job. We don't choose to see pain and suffering happen in the world. We don't mean to choose. Things happen because they happen. Life's rude, isn't it? Life really is rude sometimes. It throws you the curveballs. You don't realize what's coming. It's tough. Let's go right back to the beginning. What is the root of all this? What's the reality that we face? Why are we in this predicament? Because we're not immune to it. It's not like, well, that's happening over there and nothing ever happens to me. I guarantee you at some point in your life, in some point in all of our lives, we face those defining moments. We face those crises. We face those situations, those circumstances that are hard, that are tough. They cause us to ask why. They say, where is God? What is going on here? I don't understand how this is all working. Let's go right back to the beginning. Let's refresh ourselves. Let's remind ourselves of Adam and Eve, right? They were in a utopic world, an utopic environment. They had complete freedom. They had complete rule. They could enjoy. Everything was given. They had dominion over everything. They could relax. There was no concept of fear. There was no concept of pain and suffering because they were living in this perfect ideal. They didn't have blemish. There was no sin in existence. God created this idea. He created for them to worship and live in relationship with God, to have this harmonious relationship. God says, listen, one thing, don't eat that apple from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And it's right there for the first time in human history where this whole idea that God has given us, this idea of free will comes into existence. God is not going to be treating them like robots. God says, you've got a choice. You need to know you can't eat from there. And for the first time, they have a free will choice to do what? To eat the apple or to choose not to eat the apple. And of course, the serpent comes and he's really saying to them, why wouldn't he let you do whatever you... You know what? Something's going on here, guys. I think God's holding something from you. He's holding something from you. You can't eat that apple because there's something God doesn't want you to know. If you eat that apple, you will be like God. You should go for it. And of course, most of us know the story. What did they choose? They choose to eat the apple. And they eat the apple. And all that to say, and this is very, very simplified here, sin and rebellion now enters into human existence. Why? What two things prove that? Well, understand, first of all, God puts them on this earth and the animals and all that. You're supposed to enjoy it. Adam and Eve are running around. They're running around naked and they're enjoying life. And I was going to say picture that, but don't picture that, okay? Just trust me on that. They're running around. There's no concept. There's no concept of, you know, when we hear the word naked, it's like a self-conscious thing, right? It's a private thing. There's no concept of that. How do we know sin entered the world? Because first it said they were naked, they had no shame. And then it said, well, they found themselves naked. In other words, there was a sense of consciousness. There was a sense of awareness. There was a sense of shame and embarrassment. That's something that they never had before sin entered into the world. There were negative consequences. The second thing was this. They hid from God. They hid from God. God's pursuing them. God's saying, guys, where are you? Adam and Eve, I'm looking for you. Where are you guys? What are they doing? They're hiding. They got the fig leaves on and they're hiding because why? Because there's fear. Why would there be fear? Because there's guilt. They're worried about what God might do because God told them not to do something and they directly disobeyed. Sin has entered the world. There's a sense of guilt. There's a sense of fear. You don't go hiding on God if you've got nothing to hide from God, right? Of course, after their rebellion, Adam and Eve, what it would enter would be that they would die spiritually. There would be a sense of spiritual death. They would begin to die physically. Death wasn't part of God's plan. This physical death would be a result of sin and punishment, which leads to death. And finally, they would have to get kicked out of the Garden of Eden. See, there was a separation. There was a chasm kind of put between them and God. There was that separation and humanity, us, you and I are affected by that process. We were born with this natural tendency to sin, this bent towards doing opposite of God. It's like your child's first words. What do they say? You say yes, they say no, right? It's that natural bent and of rebellion and churning against God. The Apostle Paul even mentioned it to the Roman church. Look what he says. He says, sin entered the world. It was conceived. It happened. It enters this world through one man. Death reigned from the time of Adam. The result of one trespass, in other words, the result of the choice that they made, the disobedience that them disobeying was condemnation for all men. Through the disobedience of one man, the many were made sinners. Sin and rebellion, it's part of us. It's part of us. And evil, pain, and suffering comes out as a result of us. Now you're saying, whoa, wait a second. I'm not an evil person. I'm not doing all these. But no, understand. It's in humanity as a whole. You wonder why someone does why they do what they do, or someone goes and hurts another person. Someone goes and murders another person. Folks, we live in a broken, decaying, sin-filled world. We can't disattach ourselves from it. This is humanity right from Adam, right on through. All of us have come short of God's ideal in some way, shape, or form. It's part of our makeup. It's part of our composition. And when that comes into the deal of life, and we talk about suffering and pain, and where's God when it hurts, when we have all that in this life, life will happen in rude and unwanted ways. Now, does it happen as a result of our bad choices? Yes. Yes, it does. But it also happens just because this is the world we live in. We live in a sinful, broken humanity. Well, that's not fair. Yeah, you're right. It isn't. But we've all sinned. We've all come short. We all stand on that line. Now, we might have a line drawn and, well, this sin isn't as great as this sin, but like, it's still over the line. That's part of where things are at. Can't God just do something about that? I get it. Listen, we'll deal with these minor sins, but what about the huge atrocities? What about the terrorist acts? What about genocide? What about all of these things? Can't God do something about this? Imagine with me for a second. What if every person in the world had access to clean drinking water? That really would be a good thing. That would be an awesome thing. What if instead of 20% of the people consuming 80% of the food, everybody had enough food? And you didn't see children with these huge bellies about to explode because there's no food, there's no nourishment. What if there wasn't stuff? What if sickness and disability and cancer, Ebola, and all this kind of, what if God could just get rid of that stuff? What if people didn't harm other people and accidents didn't happen? That sort of thing. That does sound enticing, honestly. And we know, okay, yeah, it's not true. We can't do it, but it kind of sounds like the Disney World, right? It's like living in Disney World, where that's the happiest place on earth and everything's perfect and right. Everything's okay. Why can't God make it like that? Imagine if we had the ability to do that. Even if we know we can't do that, there are things that disturb us. There are things that kind of bend us out of shape. We see stuff on TV. We hear about stuff. We've been witness to stuff. We get worked up about that sort of stuff, and that's a good thing. What if you could just take a can of injustice, and you could zap out all the things that you thought were unjust? Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool? Here, child poverty, gone. Wouldn't that be awesome? What other injustices, right? Child pornography, psh, extortion, psh. What else do we have? What else do we have down? Racism, psh, right? Poverty, homelessness, psh, right? Injustices, car repairs. Seriously, Rob and I know firsthand lately what that's been like. All of you know. Gas prices, right? What if we could take all the injustices that we think are just not right, and we could just, smells good too, it's like this Aussie stuff, it's good stuff. What if you take the can of bad, and you zap, I think this is Tresemme, and you zap out all the bad, murders, right? Child molesters, give them a double dose, right? Seriously. Sickness, psh. What else? What else do we think is bad? Abusers, right? Shh. Sickness, shh. Cold weather, psh. Hate cold weather. In-laws. Canadian Tire and Tim Hortons commercials. Boom! I hate those commercials. Wouldn't that be awesome if you could just zap it all? Just, it's gone. One problem. I'm not sure if I can pull the trigger when it gets close to home. If I understand that all of us have had a natural bent towards sin and we've all messed up and we've all made mistakes, how's that going to work in my world when my son looks at me and he flat out lied to me? That's sin. How's it going to look when that friend of yours who has that daughter who, she is such a good kid, she's just binging on the alcohol right now and doing the drugs thing, but you know what, she's going to get through it. How's that look? Can you pull the trigger when it hits close to home? Or what about the friend you know, this guy really is a great guy at work. He really is a good husband. He's fantastic with his kids. But that dirty little secret is he's looking at naked pictures a lot. Oh, man. That's close. Now, all have sinned. So if we've sinned, we've come short of God's ideal. In other words, just like poverty, just like child molestation, all of those kinds of things, we've sinned against a holy, pure, perfect, awesome God. All of a sudden, you now begin to hesitate when it hits close to home. Well, you can't compare, I don't know, a kid doing some drugs to world hunger, right? Yeah, but see, part of God's nature, God can't justify one sin and then zap away another sin, right? In fact, if he did that, he would cease to be God, because part of who God is, part of his nature is perfection, is holiness, is righteousness. That's part of who he is. So he hesitates. We hesitate. Why doesn't God do it if we can't do it? Let me ask you, do you think God hesitates? We would certainly, okay, I get you, Tim. We're on this side of it. Why doesn't God just do it then? Take a look at 2 Peter, what he says in the Message. He says, don't overlook the obvious here, friends. With God, one day is as good as 1,000 years. 1,000 years as a day. God isn't late with his promise as some measure lateness. He is restraining himself on account of you, holding back the end because he doesn't want anyone lost. He's giving everyone space and time to change. Folks, God had good reason to hesitate. The reason was you and me, right? He can't just, well, take away this, take away that because I think it's bad, and then just let the other loose. See, if God wanted to zap away all the pain and suffering because of sin and rebellion, folks, he'd have to start with you and me and then make his way through whole, the entire humanity. In fact, Paul said clear to the Roman church, he says, there's no difference between Jew and Greek and Jew and Gentile. In other words, you know what he's saying? He's saying, listen, you're no different than your neighbor down the road. You're no different than that person way over there. All of us have sinned and all of us have come short to God's perfect ideal. In other words, you and I have nothing to stand on in and of ourselves. Folks, we're guilty of sin no matter how big, no matter how small. Yes, there's the line and we might be over the line, but God doesn't look and say, well, this is way over the line. We got to do something about this, but this I'll let go because it's just enough over the line. When you go over the cliff, you go over the cliff. You and I are part of that problem. It's an all-inclusive deal. Now, I say all that to say, does that minimize the pain and suffering? Does that minimize things for us? Should we, okay, I get it, Tim. God would zap us all, so the pain, okay, I get it. It's all good. No. No, it still hurts. It's still personal. It's still tough to go through. Does that mean that it makes us feel better in the face of life falling apart? No. And just as I said at the beginning, I was talking to Rob about this week. There's no emotionally satisfying answer that you can get for the issue of pain and suffering. But here's what I do know. Does it disturb God relentlessly? Absolutely it does. We see it in Scripture, and I love this. I picked up this tidbit from Andy Stanley. We know it disturbs God because it disturbs you and I. And here's basically what he was saying is that even though we're fractured, even though there's this separation, this chasm, this fracture because of the sin issue, because we are born into the image of God, we are born in the image of God, there is still enough of the image of God left in you and I. In other words, and what's the image of God? What is the essence of God? It's love. There's still enough of the image of God left in you and I that when we see something like that, it appalls us, that we get disturbed, that we get dissatisfied like God does. See, pain and suffering and life falling apart, we don't like it. There's something that disturbs. And of course, we're surprised at it. We shouldn't be. Jesus said to his disciples, what did he say? In this world, you will have trouble. He talks to his own disciples. He says, listen, guys, just because you're the chosen guys, just because you're the ones, doesn't mean you're going to be exempt from anything. You will suffer. You will find pain. You will go through hardship. But then he says, guys, be encouraged because I've overcome the world. In other words, he says to them in the same breath, listen, guys, I get that it's tough, but you need to be encouraged because of what I'm about to do. I will overcome the world, which means that there's nothing that's going to be out of my hands. There's nothing that's going to be out of my control. I will always be with you through this. You will not endure. You will not endure it on your own. Now, great to know. Is that a comfort when you're going through it personally? It's tough, isn't it? Sometimes it's not a comfort because when it hits us personally. And man, it feels awful. It's an awful thing to go through. And it's not comfort to read that. Beyond intellectually speaking. It's funny how we look at it. When you're going through a crisis, when you're going through a problem, when you're going through pain and suffering, what do? I say that I'll pray for you. When I go through the crisis, when I go through the pain and suffering, when I go through the life falling apart, you know what I do? I end up questioning God. It's part of the deal. It's hard to process. All of us have been, we might be there or we're going to be there. It's part of living this earth in humanity. It's rude. It's unpleasant. God just won't zap it out. God's got this bigger picture in mind. And I know that doesn't make it feel any better either. But we do need to come to an understanding that in our humanity, we're created beings that have a beginning and an end on this world. We can't compute. We can't be able to understand entirely what's going on and how God's got it all working out. That's when faith becomes an issue, and we'll talk about that in a second. Well, if this is the deal, if this is where you're leaving me hanging, Tim, what do I do about this? How do we work through this? Let me give you two examples. Job is the first one. He lived in the land of Uz, blameless, upright, fear. This guy had it. This guy was like the best thing going in the East. He had all the money, he had all the family, he was living for God, but trouble was coming and he didn't realize it. Sounds familiar, doesn't it, in our lives, right? His family would be destroyed, his possessions would be destroyed, he would have a terrible disease. It became very, very personal for God, or for Job. He would question God. He would holler at God. He would even challenge God. And then, of course, if you go through the book of Job, you see that he had three friends, and his three friends were basically telling him this: you must have done something to make God mad, and that's why you're suffering. In those days, part of how they viewed God, some people, part of how they viewed God and part of how they seen God was through this, what they call the theology of retribution. Don't get hung up on the word. This is what it meant. Goodness meant prosperity and blessing. Wickedness and disobedience meant suffering and punishment. And we sort of still think that way. We sort of still act like that. Maybe you've heard it in your life. Maybe you've heard it from someone else. Someone's in the hospital. And what's the visit? The visit's this. Man, this is a wake-up call for you. You better get yourself right with God. He's punishing you. Maybe you've gone through that before. Those sort of things. Here's the problem with that sort of stuff. It becomes personal. And we're trying to figure out and process it. And then beyond that, we think we've had a cosmic attack. Don't get me wrong. Are there times when we make choices and there's consequences? Absolutely. Absolutely. But then there are those times that we just can't explain. When we get into this mindset, it turns God into this means of good circumstances. We treat God like a cosmic Santa Claus. We look at God and we say, oh God, cosmic Santa Claus, I want to make sure that I'm on the right side of your naughty or nice list so that I can get my blessings, so that my wishes can all come true, because after I know exactly what I need, I want this, this, and this, I'd be really happy with that. That's the danger of thinking that way. Folks, God does not exist to give us our wishes. In fact, quite the opposite. We exist and we were created by God to worship, to serve Him, to be in this relationship with Him. So when life happens, what do we do about it? When life happens, here's what we see from Job. Don't use God, pursue God. Don't use God, pursue God. What's the overarching message? What did he do? He hollered at God, but he hollered for God. He questioned God, but he also accepted. There's a few different times where he actually says, God, you give and take away. My heart's going to choose to say. It's like that song, right? Blessed be your name. He says, though he slay me, yet I'm going to follow you. Listen, God, if this is you doing this, man, if all this stuff is happening to me, whatever the case is, whether it's you or not, however this goes, I am not going to turn from you. I am steadfast with you. We pursue God for who he is. And Job understood the meaning of that relationship. He understood that because first and foremost, God loved him and pursues him with love relentlessly. He understood and had a proper picture of God. He knew that the reciprocal effect is going to be, no matter what I'm going through in life, because God loves me, man, I'm going to love God back. In the midst, it doesn't matter the circumstances. I'm not going to go and I'm not going to say, okay, God, I love you because you've blessed me. I love you, God, because you love me. There's a relationship and there's a thing going on there. Now, does that mean, folks, we shouldn't pray for healing? That's not what I'm saying at all. We need to be praying for healing. In fact, we took communion this morning. We believe in communion as this. We believe that Jesus came and he broke his body. He was broken so that we could find what? So that we could find healing. He shed his blood for our sins. It says by his stripes we were healed. Listen, Jesus can touch and heal. We want God. We desire, we ask God to come into these circumstances in our lives. Absolutely we do, but we need to do so with a right focus and a right attitude and a right picture of God and a surrendered heart and a trust and faith that it doesn't matter, no matter what we go through, I believe God's still in control. And in spite of the pain and suffering, okay, fine. It's interesting. Job never saw why he struggled, but he saw God and he realized eventually, man, that really is enough. You see, faith isn't this optimism, this wishful thinking. If I have faith, I'm going to get this, this, and that. No, no, no. I love how Philip Yancey puts it. He says this. Faith is about believing in advance what will only make sense in reverse. Let's not use God in our pain and suffering, man. Let's first and foremost pursue God. Can we pray for healing? Can we pray for the circumstances to turn around? Absolutely. But let's do it in that attitude and that priority that I am pursuing God because he relentlessly loves me no matter what and no matter what has happened to me. Study number two is the Apostle Paul. He's speaking to the Corinthian church and he's telling them of this amazing experience that he's had with God. This it was almost like an out-of-body experience. If I could describe it today, it would be like, I don't know, me over the next little while, I'm seeking God and it was like, God was just here tangibly. I could touch him. I could taste him. I could feel him. It was just such an amazing experience that he had. It obviously drove his faith forward. It obviously helped him and strengthened him in being able to be a leader in the early church. But then a while later, he feels like he was humbled by something called the thorn in the flesh. You may have heard of that. We don't know what that is. We don't know if it was a handicap, if it was a disability, if it was a limitation. Whatever it was, we learn about God through his pain and through his struggle. Here's what it says in the message. It says, because of the extravagance of those revelations, and so I wouldn't get a big head, I was given the gift of a handicap to keep me in constant touch with my limitations. Satan's angel, he did his best to get me down, when he, in fact, what he did is he drove me to my knees. No danger then of walking around high and mighty. At first, I didn't think of it as a gift, and I begged God to remove it. Three times I did that. And then he told me, hey, Paul, my grace is enough. It's all you need. My strength comes into its own in your weakness. Once I heard that, I was glad to let it happen. I quit focusing on the handicap and I began appreciating the gift. It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weakness. Now I take limitations in stride, and with good cheer, these limitations that cut me down to size, like abuse and accidents, opposition, bad breaks, I just let Christ take over. And so the weaker I get, the stronger I become. Is this to minimize your pain and suffering and to say, you know what, it really is no big deal, you're blowing it out of proportion? No, absolutely not. Paul's just giving a glimpse of the process that he's gone through. This wasn't, okay, I don't know, the thorn in the flesh was, I don't know, let's say he had a bum foot and he had to limp around, okay? It wasn't, okay, God, take this away, take this away, take this away. There's this three times, and then Lord, and then 2 hours later, God said, listen, Paul, just relax, it's all good. No, it wasn't that. This was a process of time, and he's talking about his journey of pain and suffering. And it's amazing. Paul first takes it, and he prays. What's he pray? He prays, God, please take the pain away. But through the process, and after God spoke to him, what was his prayer? His prayer was this, God, take my pain and redeem it somehow. He stopped focusing on the problem. His limitations actually presented him with a unique opportunity to let Christ take the wheel and to experience God and to experience his power in a way that otherwise he might never have experienced. In your weakest moment lies the potential for God's strongest work in your life. Believe it. That in your weakest moment, God has not disappeared, but in your weakest moment lies the potential for God's greatest work, for God's strongest work, for God's best work in your life. Now, does that mean that I've motivated you to call on the suffering? Oh, please come, I want to suffer. No. But life will happen. And just know that God's strongest, greatest work can come out in the midst of these situations that you find yourself in. Where is God when life falls apart? First, let me tell you where he was. He came to earth and he suffered the most excruciating, painful death so that you and I could be forgiven for our sin and we could connect back with God. That's where he was, so that you and I could connect back with God. And if we have that relationship with Jesus Christ, where's God? God's right here. He is with us. He is for us. He is working and acting for us. We may not completely understand it. It may not make sense to us. In fact, we may never understand it. It may never make sense. In fact, we might even criticize. Notice what Sharon Osbourne said there. We just got to the point when we couldn't figure it out anymore. We just assumed you're a flop. It's amazing how we can do that with God. We may criticize, it may not make sense, but know this. Through your pain and through your suffering, God is painting a masterpiece. And folks, you are that masterpiece. You just remember through the pain and suffering, through the life falling apart, who is painting your life picture. Remember who you are. Remember whose you are.